You're listening to the New City Church podcast. These episodes are recorded live on Gadigal land. Sometimes the audio quality might not be perfect because what you're listening to is a conversation. We don't edit out the chatter, and we think that's what makes it authentic. Wherever you're tuning in from, we hope you find this episode encouraging. Welcome to New City Church. A particularly warm welcome if this is your first or second time here, or if you're feeling newish. It's good to have you in our little community tonight. It's wonderful to have you with us, and to those who are joining us online, hello. I hope that you feel connected wherever you're zooming in from tonight. My name's Joel, pastor here, and a great privilege to be in this space with you. As Kiralee said, we are in a series on the book of Luke. Last week, I told you that I just wasn't feeling it. Tonight, I'm going to tell you that I've been fatigued all week. It's just been relentless. So that's where I've come. But with the picnic and just with that worship, I feel ready for this now. So thank you. I'm also looking at Jaden, who's been at the Taylor Swift concert and has already told me he'll be falling asleep during the talk. So, no offense taken. I have a prop that is exciting. You're going to like it even more when you see it. Whoa, chocolates. Everyone loves favorites. Yeah, correct. Yum. Unless you're allergic. I apologize to everyone who is allergic. We're going to use these in a moment. You don't have to answer anything throughout tonight. You can just sit and enjoy. But one of the themes that we're going to look at tonight is this idea of gratitude. Gratitude is having a bit of a du jour moment. It is all the rage, especially in positive psychology and popular psychology. People are saying you need an attitude of gratitude because it's good for your well-being. Here's my question. I want you to, if you're comfortable, turn to a couple of people around you. And I want to ask the question, why is gratitude so good for us? What is it about gratitude that actually makes it a really good thing to do? That's the question. There may be chocolates involved. We'll find out. And we'll come together in just a moment. Maybe have one minute and gather and we'll share wisdom. Go for it. Did you know people who were primed for gratitude? This is a study that came out of the University of Miami. People were asked to either journal bad things that happened to them or to journal gratitude. And after 10 weeks, people who had been journaling gratitude reported overall much higher well-being and had been to see the doctor more often. There's a fun fact for you, because they looked after themselves better, not because they were sicker. But because they actually took more proactive action. There's a fun fact for you. Why is gratitude so good for us? Does anyone have wisdom?
Hi, I'm Keegan. Gratitude makes you happy. Yes. Yep, that's my...
Gratitude makes you happy. Happy people don't kill people, to quote Legally Blonde.
Hey, I kind of see it as a bit of a great connector as well. It connects us to people and then also God. So, yeah.
You. Gratitude is a natural connector. Other thoughts?
We were kind of talking about it as like a moment of that where you actually pause, and rather than just being fueled forward and with also like a negativity bias, you pause and you reflect on what is present and past and acknowledge the good that is there, but then also get a chance to celebrate in it and see what you get drawn to and what you're hungry for.
Yes. And in a busy world, moments where we get to pause are rare. So to pause and think about deep values is so valuable. Yeah. Well, let's jump into the book of Luke. As Kiralee said, we are in the book of Luke up until Easter. And Rob is going to read us a story. And in this story, I want to give you a heads up. The first couple of paragraphs are a little bit awkward because it's Jesus telling people how to treat slaves. And he says, don't be thankful to them. So I want to flag that to be like, that's awkward. But then I want to unpack it. And I'm going to suggest that actually our first reading of it may not be actually what Jesus is saying. So I want to flag, I think there is a better interpretation than what is initially you might be thinking. And then we go into a story where there's a group of people who are healed of leprosy. And only one person comes back And the person who comes back to thank Jesus, we're in this gratitude area, is a Samaritan. Context, Samaritan and the Jewish people, Jesus is a Jew, Samaritans and the Jewish people are sworn enemies. So that's some of the context that you need to know. We're in Luke chapter 17, reading from verse 11. Follow along on the screen or on your devices or hard copy if you still have one of those. Thanks, Rob. Sorry, Luke 17. Oh, yes, from verse 7. Thank you.
And what Jesus says from verse 7 is in response to, in verse 5, the apostles said to the Lord, increase our faith. And so Jesus talks to them, and from verse 7 he says, suppose one of you has a servant ploughing or looking after the sheep. Will he say to the servant when he comes in from the field, come along now and sit down and eat? Won't he rather say, prepare my supper, get yourself ready and wait on me while I eat and drink. After that, you may eat and drink. Will he thank the servant because he did what he was told to do? So you also, when you have done everything you were told to do, should say, we are unworthy servants, we have only done our duty. Now on his way to Jerusalem, Jesus travelled along the border between Samaria and Galilee. As he was going into a village, 10 men who had leprosy met him. They stood at a distance and called out in a loud voice, Jesus, Master, have pity on us. When he saw them, he said, go, show yourselves to the priests. And as they went, they were cleansed. One of them, when he saw he was healed, came back, praising God in a loud voice. He threw himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him. And he was a Samaritan. Jesus asked, were not all 10 cleansed? Where are the other 9? Has no one returned to give praise to God except this foreigner? Then he said to him, rise and go. Your faith has made you well.
Thank you, Rob. So there's our story for this evening. We are looking at people who are on the margins of the book of Luke, who are on the margins of society, and how Jesus interacts with them. And tonight our margins are those lepers, and in particular a Samaritan leper. And here comes our chocolates. Yeah. Poll, whose favorite is Turkish Delight? Yoo-hoo, Kirill, Elki, don't open it just yet. Whose favorite is crunchy? I was actually going to say it's mine and I was going to keep it, but you're the birthday boy, so I feel like I have to give it to you. Don't eat it just yet. Does anyone love Morrows? Aren't Morrows just Mars bars, but this brand? Yeah. Okay. Brilliant. Okay, one more. Who loves twirls? Yay! Okay. Oh, that was a terrible, that literally got halfway down the building. Okay, don't open them yet. Does anyone have any other favorites? Like, what are your actual favorites? Picnic. Okay. I shouldn't be doing this. Anyway, okay, we've got a couple of chocolates floating around the room. I bought these chocolates this morning from Woolworths. I bought them at Woolworths Ashfield. I went down, I almost got hit by a car as I was going to purchase them. I was crossing Liverpool Road. Well, actually, no, I hadn't yet stepped onto the road. A fire engine had gone past, so everyone was a little bit distracted. The walking man was green, and just before I stepped out, a car, whoo, it was so close. That is absolutely irrelevant to the story, but it's interesting, isn't it? So I got to Woolworths, I purchased them, I brought them back, I opened the box, I took one out of the box, and I put it in our toilet, and I shook it around a bit, I took it out, and then I cleansed it, so I got alcohol wipe and cleansed it and put it back in there. I don't know which one it was, and then I shook it around. It was the morrow. Okay, those people who have chocolates in your hands, how are you feeling at this point? Fine. You're feeling fine, Andy? The chocolate. You reckon the chocolate is untarnished? What do you reckon, Rachel, as you sit there eating your picnic? You're like, it's too late? It's too late. Did anyone screaming? Anyone like, oh, you probably shouldn't have done that? That probably wasn't wise? Or you probably should have told us before you handed them out? That you trust me, says Rob. Wow, that's really lovely, but false. That was a foolish, foolish thing to do, Rob. Why? Why? Look, this is feeling like a youth group talk right now, isn't it? I did not do that. I did not take it home and dunk it in the toilet. That would have been disgusting. I have standards. Our toilets are clean, by the way. Cleaned them yesterday. But even so, the idea of a chocolate, even if it's in its wrapper, being dunked into a toilet is disgusting, isn't it? Yeah, thank you, Chris. Thank you for nodding so vigorously. And then when you put it in the box, suddenly all the other chocolates, there's something wrong with them as well, even if you've dunked it in alcohol wipe, yeah? Okay, that is the image that I want to keep in the back of our mind when we're thinking about the concept of leprosy in the ancient world, because these people who are suffering from this disease, they are contagious. Anyone got experience with concepts around contagious diseases from the last couple of years? Anyone, like, anyone maybe understand something about that? And they're currently in a form of quarantine. So they have been cut off. And the way it would work is if somebody saw a skin disease on themselves or a family member, they would have to raise the alarm. Ancient world skin diseases could be deadly, weren't necessarily, but deeply, deeply contagious, and they had to be put out of the camp. And that's why, as Jesus is walking down through somewhere between Samaria and Jerusalem, he's on his way down, and he comes to this village, and outside the village, not in the village, outside the village, are these 10 lepers. And they call out to him, Jesus, Jesus, Master, have pity on us, because they're not allowed in. The doors have been well and truly barred. And in this context, we have both Jews and Samaritans, both as lepers. So the class structure of race in this situation has been absolved because there is something far worse. And they now face the threat of wilderness out on their own with no city walls to protect them. That's the context. And everyone looks at them as though someone's just dunked them in the toilet. And you cannot touch them. In fact, one of the strategies that they use here, we use the 4-meter rule, stay away. When we were coming out of lockdown back in those days, they had a strategy which I thought was fantastic and I thought we should embrace. As somebody would approach them, they would say, unclean, unclean, unclean. And they would just yell it over and over. So everyone would know, okay, they are unclean. Don't go near them. Now, here's the issue that I think we have in leaping from first century Judaism into modern world. When we have leprosy, leprosy in those days, it could cover many different ailments. It was a lot of different types of skin disease. They just lumped it all in one. When we have leprosy these days, we go and see a doctor. We see a health professional. In those days, they didn't have health professionals in the same that we did. Instead, when the men see Jesus, they cry out for healing, and Jesus tells them to go and see who? The priests. To go and see the priests, the people of the religious order. Because the priests filled a role in society which was ceremonial, it was religious, but it expanded that boundary. And part of their role was to determine who was clean and who was unclean. Now, we don't have that kind of segregation in Western culture. We don't have that category of clean and unclean. Or do we? Yeah, that was a nice noise. Dun, dun, dun. Or do we? We know that anyone who has been dunked in a toilet is unclean. Yeah? We have that category. We know that there are people in society who you probably shouldn't talk to because polite society doesn't mix with impolite society. We have people who are on the margins who we'd rather not invite to the party. I think we do have this concept. I think we well and truly have this concept of clean and unclean. We might call it in and out. We might call it boundaries. We might call it popular, impopular. But if we start to play with, okay, well, what is actually taking place here? It's the ones who are not seen as safe versus those who are seen as safe in this context. And Jesus tells them to go and see the priest. Here's what I find interesting. For first century Judaism, for Jesus' worldview, there was a category, and it was a big bucket, and everything went in that bucket. As time went on, we separated those buckets. We took them apart, and we took biology, we took disease, we took medicine out of that bucket, and we put it in a big bucket called secular. That's the bucket we created, the secular. And then we kept another bucket. What's the opposite of secular? The sacred. We kept the sacred and we held that. And into the sacred, we poured our worship songs and we poured nice paintings about religious stuff and we poured incense and smells and bells and whistles. We put prayer in that bucket. We put fellowship and community group, but we made sure that work didn't go in that bucket. Work fell over here, and politics fell over here, and national parks fell over here. But occasionally, you don't really know which category it falls into, and so then we say, okay, well, like parties, don't talk about religion or politics, so just stay away. Yeah. Here's my premise that I'm working off in life now. I'm not doing it very well, but I want to do it more. I don't think those buckets exist. I don't think those buckets exist. I think everything has the potential to be sacred. Everything has the potential to come under that banner of holy, of sacred, of set apart. Such that everything that we do can be part of our worship practice. That's the worldview of the ancients. And I freaking love it. I think it's so powerful because it gives dignity to everything that we do. I want to see God in everything. I'm not very good at it. But I want to get good at it. I want to get to the point where I see all things as sacred, including hard times. As we go through this series in Luke, we are looking at what happens on the margins, and the margin that we're here tonight looking at is people who are unwell, people who experience chronic illness. We're going to explore this even further in a few weeks' time. But tonight, I want to introduce you or reintroduce you to Kiralee. Can we invite Kiralee up? Woo! Kiralee, we're, as I said, looking at this concept of gratitude and worship, of sacredness in the context of margins and chronic illness. With that in mind, can you give us a bit of a snapshot of what has been going on for you the past little while?
It's kind of funny because I don't know. I grew up with a family where pain, the culture around it was you just push through and like never go see a doctor or anything like that. And I also didn't want to put anything else more on my family's plate. So I've probably been experiencing pain for a long time, but never spoke up about it until 3 years ago. The pain kind of got to a point where I was really immobilized and I had people in my life who actually was like, it's not selfish to see a doctor and to help yourself. That's meant that the last 3 years I've been bounced around. Like I have a good GP, but I keep getting bounced around to different specialists trying to figure out what's wrong with my pain. I had out of control migraines, but I also have back pain that no one can make sense of. And I have like abdomen pain that no one can make sense of. I've even had exploratory, like a surgery, and I thought it was one thing and it wasn't. And so currently my last specialist doesn't actually think, yeah, either way, it's just, I don't know what's wrong with me, but I, for the last 3 years, get consistent pain to the point that like I'm very immobilized for like a week at a time, and then I'll do all that I can to be well, and then the next week I'll be totally fine, heaps of energy myself. Or then sometimes when it does get a bit harder, I'll be tired for like months on end. So yeah,
It's been such a long journey, and we've kind of walked alongside it a little bit in this community. Next question we have is something along the lines of what has your walk with God looked like in that? How has it ebbed and flowed? How has that journey been for you?
I guess I was going to put this out as like I'm one person who's experienced chronic pain, so I don't know other people's experiences, but also what I'm going to share is really more about where I've been at myself at this time. But funnily enough, I feel like my relationship with God is like really steadfast. Like this entire time, like I think particularly right, but like as I was deconstructing my faith and doing the pain at the same time, I don't know, I just kind of got to this point with God where it's like, you are love, and I don't have strings attached to that anymore. And so it's kind of, I'm just learning more and more what love is. And so I feel like I know him. I feel like I'm drawn towards what love is, but no longer do I feel like I have to do a lot to love him. And so for me, I feel like my relationship with him has just been like, we're together. I'm always exploring who he is and learning more, but just feel like I totally have that just trust in who he is, and that I'm always being drawn towards getting to know that or witness that more. And so for me, he's never been a question of like, why did you do this to me, or why am I experiencing this, or anything like that, or like asking, like, because maybe in the past I might have asked, you know, have I done something wrong, and is this punishment, or what's my lesson I need to learn from this? And it's never been like that, honestly. Like, it's just been, you are you, and I just want to learn more and kind of just be with you. And so he's more been kind of the one who gives me excitement about what's ahead, and also just feeling like that hug and that comforter that's just kind of coming up behind me that I can just lean my head on when I'm just too tired. Mm.
That is so positive. And like you said, that's your journey, and everybody's journey just takes those really unique twists and turns. I know for you, one of the ways that I've seen you handle things is really fostering a gratitude. I've seen you do that really proactively. And one of the ways that plays out is in worship, and particularly music, worship music. Can you talk us through what that has meant for you in that context?
It's really funny. I don't go out of my way to be grateful and thankful, but it's kind of just, I don't know, something a part of me, and I don't know if that's helpful or egotistical or whatever. I'm sorry. But for me, worship is simply just a chance to be and acknowledge what is and be in relationship about that. So for me, worship is acknowledging I am a part of creation and the wildness of that. Like, I am organically created. I'm fluid in regards to, like, I'm always learning, I'm always journeying, but so are the trees, and so is the sky, and so is the human beings beside me. And I don't know, I'm just grateful for life, that there is existence. And for me, there is a beauty in that. And I think I'm just grateful for the beauty because I find it wondrous. And so for me, I do think music is a big part, because I love music. It's, you know, people call it the language of the soul. And for me, it's just this ability to be able to put that into expression and into sound and into words as like a declaration of, ah, this is awesome. of that declaration of love or hope or prayer, because sometimes when I'm worshiping, like, do I feel like the justice is in our systems and all that kind of, no, but it's in our hearts, and it's something that I know that we're crying out for. So that's, I think, for me, music is a space to put what's inside into expression. And I love doing that communally. I won't lie, it's been different for me communally worshiping since deconstructing my faith, because sometimes the people that have written the songs or some of the words in the songs don't match that to me. But that communal worship and that hasn't lost that. It's just, I think I'm just sitting with some of the music and going, But for me, worship itself, I find that expression of living into intentionally and out and just wanting to be a part of that excitement and relationship. Like, I just feel like worship is connecting over these things, whether it's with God or with myself or with others. I do that, yes, through my music, but honestly, it's just through myself and how I live. So I find, like me and Emily were talking about it in the car on the way here, like, love learning. I think worship in learning of going, I want to know more. I want to know what humanity is like. I want to know what God's like. I want to know what this experience is. And for me, that's an intentional sense of, I want to connect over this and I want to, like, know what this is. So for me, worship is an intention as well as a celebration. So yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. Thank you. If you were to think about some of your journey and some of the research as well that you've done around chronic health problems and how that has shaped some of your journey, what is something that you would want the church to know, either our church or the church broadly? What does that journey look like?
Yeah, I thought about this question a little bit on my own personal level and then also like practically and stuff like that. But with our, like, we live in a medical model as our health system. So what that means is it's more about symptoms and curing those. And we're very segmented, like siloed. So that's why I've seen like four different people and I still haven't got an answer, because they see them all like individually and maybe they're all interconnected. And so like we have beautiful, intelligent doctors who've put so much hard work into what they do, but the system can be kind of against that. And there's wait times and there's money involved. And so, you know, often for people with chronic pain, you get caught between wanting to work, loving your work, but also it being a massive effort some days, but also needing work because it's also great for your health. But at the same time, I need this money to be able to pay for the appointments, but also I need time off to get my appointments. So just recognizing the systems, really, like, often people are in pain physically, but also mentally, emotionally, because of the frustration of the journey with the system. So I think just acknowledging that that can be hard. And I think just that we're not defined by our pain. Like, I don't feel like I'm defined by my pain. It's just something I'm experiencing. And there's still everything of me. So like on days like today, I've got energy. I want to listen to music and chat and be, and that's awesome. And then, yeah, some days I'm not there because I'm battling a lot of pain and a lot of fatigue, but that doesn't mean I am the pain and the fatigue. And so just recognizing that if someone is experiencing something, it's not who they are. And so a part of that, like, often I feel like I'm a broken record, because for the last 3 years I'm like, yeah, I'm okay, like, this week has been hard, but like, I'm good today, or yeah, no, I'm so tired, but I'm here. And it gets hard because you want to be honest about where you're at, but at the same time it's like, great, I'm this person again. So I think just sometimes it's not, you don't have to fix anything, but just like even just being like, you're totally fine, be how you are, or just like letting that person know it's okay. Like, you're being with, you don't have to fix anything, but just being with on the journey, it's just been so lovely, just because once again, you're allowed to connect. And I think that's just also so important to well-being, is connection. And so I think just in helping someone connect however is possible for them in that moment, or in that story or that chapter of their story, I think is really important for the church to know and not judge. And maybe another thing, not so much in this church, but other churches, that sense of like, you need to give. And I am a giver and I love giving. It's like, it's so much a part, but just being in pain and then being like, oh no, I need to still give. Like, that can be exhausting and more harmful. And so just that space of, no, you can be here and just be and not do anything, not give, all of that kind of stuff. So I think messages along that line of how to help someone connect as they are, whether it's chronic pain or anything else, and just the freedom and love offered in that space and the compassion of that, I think is what I'd probably say is important.
That's That's good. Thank you. Yeah, New City Church. Imagine if we were a place where you could just flomp and be.
Which I do regularly.
And do, yeah, yeah. And it's so wonderful that people can do that and be a broken record and be okay with that. And we're just here. We'll just keep walking along that journey alongside people. Do you have any other thoughts, final thoughts on attitudes around gratitude and how you keep openness to gratitude toward God?
I think for me, like, I think I surprised someone at the end of last year, because last year was a really bad year for the pain. And they're like, oh, wow, you've had such a rough year. And I was like, that's actually not how I see it. Like, I actually, last year, I feel like I knew myself more. I feel like I am more confident. I feel like I, you know, have these leaps and bounds and great memories and met new people. And like, yeah, the pain was like in and throughout that, but it wasn't the thing that maybe made those things happen, maybe partly, but just recognizing that like there's so many more things going on. And so for me, like, I'm just grateful for people and connection and connecting to myself. And yeah, maybe the pain sometimes gave me opportunities to learn that. So I think for me, this pain, a big part of my connection with it has been, it's helped me have compassion, like learn self-compassion more. Like, you know, I thought I knew it, but then it's like, I was, you know, I'll travel emotionally okay with the pain for a while, but then it's like, no, I thought it'd be done by now. And then learning new depths of self-compassion. It helped me also learn, I think, to have empathy for people who might also have experiences that are like mine, but also just different, but have need for self-compassion. And so for me, I just feel like more and more I'm learning what love is like, and I love that adventure. So part of me is like, yeah, this is great. And then, yeah, just wished painkillers worked. But so for me, it's like, it's just another avenue, once again, getting to know humanity and what love is. And so it's actually been a beautiful journey of just getting to know more and more what connection is. And that just gets me excited, and I just get hungry to learn more about it. So I don't know. I think sometimes just don't assume what pain or hard times are like, because you don't want to, I hate positive, toxic positivity. And that's been none of it. But just recognizing that, oh, I wonder what else is going on. So, yeah.
Thank you very much for sharing. So appreciate it. Thanks. Let's thank Kira Lee. There's a lot of wisdom in this community. Appreciate it. In the story that we just read, that Rob read to us, Jesus comes across these 10 lepers, and he comes across them on his way to Jerusalem. Now, that might not mean much at this point, but if you'd read through the book of Luke at this stage, that phrase will have come up a few times. And the phrase literally, it's he turned his face to Jerusalem. He set his face to Jerusalem. And the idea throughout the book of Luke is that Jesus has been sent on a mission, and that he is destined and has prepared that he would die. That is where he's heading. And as he sets his face toward Jerusalem, that's the task at hand. That's the context that we have this really problematic passage. Can we dive into that just for half a moment? Because I want to sit with it, recognize the fact that the Bible has some things to say that might sit with us uncomfortably, and Jesus is not squeaky clean by the looks of it. It's in verse 7 of chapter 17, and Jesus says, suppose one of you has a servant or a slave, is another way of translating that, plowing or looking after the sheep. Will he say to the servant when he comes in from the field, come along now and sit down to eat? Won't he rather say, prepare my supper, get yourself ready and wait on me while I eat and drink? That's a confusing thing for Jesus to say, yeah? Because we love Jesus, who is full of dignity and who honors the other. And here he seems to be saying, okay, well, you've got a slave, use them. And don't expect to be grateful, slave. Don't expect any thanks. Now, that if that was just as it is, I would have huge problems with it. But it's not all it is. One of the things that we want to do as we read the Bible well is put it in context. and look at what is going on before and after the sentences. And if that was just a floating series of sentences, I would say, well, let's cross that out and get rid of it. But I want to put it in that context and see what else happens. When I wrestled with it this week, I read fairly widely, and Robert Bawley was an incredible commentator on this. Robert Bawley has a commentary. If anyone is a nerd around the book of Luke, read the book, Commentary on Luke, a Social Identity Commentary. It's absolutely brilliant. But he points out a couple of things. He points out that there's a phrase in here that can be translated a couple of different ways. We're going to get nerdy just for a moment. When Jesus says in verses 9 and 10, will he thank the servant because he did what he was told to do? In verse 10, so you also, when you have done everything we were told to do, you should say, we're unworthy servants. We have only done our duty. Now, Robert Bawley points out that that word should, that word doesn't exist there. In the Greek, that word is not present. Instead, it can also read, you were told to do, you will say, we are unworthy servants. The difference is Jesus giving an instruction or is he pointing out something that often happens? That's a huge difference. Is Jesus saying, this is what you need to do? Or is he saying, this is what is always happening? Do we see how that changes the entire meaning of that sentence? That shifts it completely, because right in the very next story, we have a story in which somebody doesn't get thanked. And it's Jesus. I have a feeling that what's happening here is Jesus is saying, I've come here to serve. And something that I'm observing constantly is that your servants don't get thanked very much. And now let me show you. The disciples have said, increase our faith. And Jesus says, look at your servants. They work so hard all day, and then they come in, and what do? You tell them to go get ready to serve you dinner, and then you expect more, and you never thank them. Let me show you what this looks like. And then he goes ahead and does this remarkable healing. I love this, because at this point, Jesus is not the one saying, you need to serve me. Jesus is the one from Isaiah, that suffering servant who says, I have come to give my life, in the context of I've set my face toward Jerusalem. Does that help make more sense of that really complicated little passage? I think that puts it in context really beautifully. And at that point, something else starts to come up. And this is the phrase that I've been sitting with this week as I've been reading this story. We have been called to bring our gratitude toward Jesus. We've been called to bring worship toward Jesus. But for so many of us, we feel like the worship that we bring is somehow tainted, that the worship that we bring is broken. Broken worship is still worship. That's where I want to sit. Broken worship is still worship. Tired worship is still worship. Worship that is half-hearted is still worship. Remarkably, those 9 people who never came back to thank Jesus, presumably their leprosy stayed healed. We have no indication that it was reversed or that Jesus somehow smited them. Jesus still invited them to be part of his growing kingdom, but only one person, the one who was the most outcast, only one person came and got to embrace the kingdom more fully. Worship is a response to the actions of God, but we recognize that we don't always see the full actions of God. Worship is a response to the glory of God, but we recognize that we very rarely see the full glory of God. And so the worship that we bring is always going to be meager. It's always going to be small compared to what it could be. But broken worship is still worship. I want New City Church, and I want this because I need it. I want New City Church to be a place where our worship comes out of an encounter with Jesus and is deeply authentic, such that if we arrive and we are tired and we are sore and we are hurt, we can still bring whatever worship we have, and as a community, we recognize that and say, that is worship. Where people can come through these doors and say, I don't know who God is anymore. I don't know if I can trust this Jesus, but I'm trying to, and I'm walking towards this Jesus, and I'm trying to understand this Jesus. And we as a community say, that is worship. Where people can come who are broken and hurt and tired and exhausted, and they might raise their hands or they might never feel like they can. And we say, that is worship. And maybe you're in this space and you love to dance when you worship through music. And maybe you're in this space where you want to sit and let the music wash over you as we play worship music. And I want us to stand as a community and say, that is worship. That is true, authentic, honest worship. I want people to be in this space. This is where it's going to get, I don't know, maybe opening ideas for some people. I want people to come into this space and prophesy in a way that is in line with how the Bible calls to prophesy. We can discuss that at another time, because that is an act of worship. To come into this space and feel that you can speak in tongues in a way that edifies yourself, if that is how you enact your spirituality, may this be a space where you can do that for your own journey, because that is a form of worship. Where you can lie down at the back or stand and dance at the front, because that is worship. I love this idea. I've been captured by it. I don't know if you can tell. Because as we grow as a church community, I want this to be a space where people can come, and if they have been healed of their leprosy, they can fall at the feet of Jesus in whatever way that looks for them, and they can declare, I have been cleansed. Thank you, Jesus. And maybe you walk into this space and you're like, I have nothing to thank Jesus for. Welcome. Welcome into this space. Chat to the people around you. Maybe they have something that they're thankful for. Maybe it is a space where you can gently start to peel back that gratitude and discover that again, or maybe for the first time. But I want us to be a church that responds to Jesus in a way that is full of gratitude. That fills me with hope. And if the worship that you bring feels broken, it feels tainted, it doesn't feel complete, I don't care. I just don't care. I mean, I care if that causes concern for you, but I don't care about the fact that it's broken, because mine is too. And if I'm going to be able to worship here, I need to create a space where I can worship in a broken way. That's where I sit. So that's the posture that I want to bring into this worship space. I recognize that in this context, I've been talking about worship a lot as what we do here, and particularly as we sing. And I want to say that that is not all that worship is. Again, that's a big discussion. But as I was just thinking through this passage this week, that's really what I was sitting with. I want to have a chat with Brad now, publicly. Not just me and him off. Brad, come on up. Brad is one of our worship team leaders, and worship is a core part of your faith. It's a core part of the Christian faith. I want to ask, what does that look like for you?
I took notes because Joel was so nice to give me a heads up on these questions. I used to be a tap dancer.
What?
Yeah, I know. But I... I wouldn't say that that's my worship now, even though I have the tap shoes. But I think, like, from a very young age, I became this creative being. And so therefore whether it was dancing as a real young kid and then being like going to music classes in school and just, you know, walking through an art gallery or like seeing creativity in spaces. And I think that's, for me, been, in answer to your question, like, that's probably what it looks like for me in terms of creativity. I'm pretty passionate about not boxing in like worship as an expression that only is song or, you know, only is music related, but like it can be in so much of what we do, like from the correct posture of the heart. For me, now in this stage of my life, in the last maybe 5-10 years, it has been music for me, because I think it kind of gave me an emotional language, and I think it gets to the heart right away, at least for me. You know, I was pondering on the Taylor Swift phenomenon and how like the Gen Z and the millennial era are, you know, there's this obsession around it. And like a lot of the analysis is about that these songs have hit people, like millennials and Gen Z, like in a way that people are related to it. And so I kind of feel that when it comes to music, that like I can feel it in my heart, like when with music. And then unrelated to creativity, when I go for a run, I never take headphones or listen to music or sound. I just try and like speak to God in that. And I feel like that's maybe a space of worship, you know, where I can seek clarity and I can hopefully hear him in a way like to guide my life, like without noise, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. How have you fostered that worship? I know that, you know, in your life, even the past few years, there's been huge trials. How have you fostered that worship and that sense of connection, perhaps? I don't know what word you use, during those seasons of trials.
That's a good question. I think I found sometimes, like, even just sitting at the piano, it would be the only place where I could find peace. And that's because it's like worship for me has never been about performance and trying to, you know, get perfection. And you touched on it just there. At whatever state we're in, we can, you know, worship God. But for me, in my home, in my bedroom, like sitting at my piano and just being my honest self, like that being an offering to God. I think like the hallmark or the start of any healthy relationship is honesty. And so if I want to have this personal relationship with God, that it starts with honesty. And I think that there's something beautiful in that. That's my offering to him. So when I'm sitting there at piano, I'm bringing my disappointment, you know, I'm bringing my depression, I'm bringing highs and lows of the day. Like I'm just trying to bring my honest self, as I guess a communion with God. Like it's a conversation, that's helped me. Yeah, I wrote here that us bringing ourselves and our true reality to God is possibly the most precious thing we can do on any given day. And I think whether it is your depression, it's still precious. You're bringing it to God, you know, or if it's disappointment, it's precious to God. In, I guess, a earthly way, I'm moving my energy towards God. You know, I'm pointing it in that kind of direction when it comes to my worship.
Yeah, that's good. In the story that we read, the Samaritan is full of gratitude, and that flows over into worship. For you, what's that link between gratitude and worship? How do they play out for you?
Okay, this is kind of fun because I was having this conversation with my therapist just on Friday, because it's not my therapist. No, that wouldn't go down well. Okay, really practical, kind of unrelated, but there's an app called the 5-Minute Journal, and I could be a lot better at it than I am, but it makes like this idea of like journaling gratitude, like very, very simple. And you kind of like it sets, you can set a reminder at the beginning of the day, at the end of the day. So at like 7 a.m. or whenever you wake up, like it'll ping your phone and it's like three things that you're looking forward to, you know, and it gives you prompts. Like if you literally wake up and you go, you know, I hate life today. It's like, it gives you, what about this? What about the meal you're going to eat? What about the chocolate last night? Like that sort of, you know, and then at the end of the day, it comes, pings you again, and it gives you a reflection on the day. Like, and it's really cool and practical. But I think as cheesy as it sounds, and not to live in a fantasy world, but I think there is always something to be grateful for. I think if you look for evil, you'll find it. And if you look for good, you'll find it. You know, we don't get to decide what exists in the world or in front of us, but we actually get to decide how we perceive it and how we interpret it and what it means to us. So I think that when it comes to worship, again, it's the response. It's not a thing, it's a response to something. So it's like someone's giving you a gift, you respond with thank you, you know, or you see something beautiful, you see beautiful sunset. It's like the response is wow. And so therefore worship is not that gift or the sunset or the flower, it's our response to it, you know. And so I guess I try and take that into my day of the simplest things, and sometimes it means nothing to anyone else but me, you know. You know, you can see something that is just so dumb that's not even worth explaining to someone, you know, like the little weed flower that grows between the concrete crack, and you could see something and be grateful, like use that as a moment of gratitude. When it comes to worship, I think it's our response to those moments. Yeah.
Thank you. Any other thoughts? Thank you. Yep. Let's thank Brad. Actually, we're going to sing again. Invite Brad and Thomas up. We're having another song. We're wildly shaking up the order of our service. We're going to have another song together. And I invite you to use this song as a chance to think through some of those things that we've covered. And let me give you this one thought that I've been sitting with this week. It might feel like at times you are that chocolate that has been dunked in the toilet. Has anyone felt that? You've been in that place where you're like, I feel like I am tainted. And you can put that tainting with whatever it is. It might be that you feel like you have in the past been tainted by your gender or your sexuality. So many of us experience that. Or you believe the wrong thing, or you're in the wrong place, or there's a habit or a thing that you just can't break and you know that it's causing harm, a sin that has just grabbed hold of you, and you're struggling with self-forgiveness or forgiveness from others. There are so many reasons why you have been dunked in the shitter. One of the great truths of the Christian tradition is that you have been utterly washed clean of all of those. That is one of the great truths of the Christian tradition, that all of those things no longer count, that they are gone, that they are wiped clean, that they are washed away. And however you think that happened, with Jesus and your theology in that space, there's many different ways to think how that actually took place. But the one of the great truths is that you can stand here or sit here or dance here or kneel here knowing that God has called you non-toilet dunked. For me, that is a great source of gratitude because I can come 100% as I am and forget about what everyone out there has said about me and my journey and my marriage and my future. I can forget about that and know that in God I am whole and clean and, dare I say it, sacred. For that I'm grateful. Let's sing. Make yourself comfortable in the space. I'm going to stand because that's how I love worshiping.
Wonderful. I think I'm just sitting in that fact of he is, they are, God. that it is wonderful that, like Joel shared, whether it's broken worship or just the humanity of what we exist in a broken world, we are, and God doesn't expect anything more than that. It's not imperfect in his eyes, it just is, and that it just is connection, it is love, it is togetherness, and that is wonderful. And that there's a freedom and a relief and a joy and just, I don't know, this gooiness. I'm just feeling gooey. And I am grateful for that. Like, I'm grateful because otherwise I don't know what. And just grateful to be together, to be loved, to be known, and for there more to know, and there's more to the journey. And I'm grateful, like, thank you, Joel, for, like, actually reading a passage that just looks horrible when you first read it, but then actually doing the work and saying, hey, look, the translation, this is, you know, how it is, and maybe it's not that. Like, and I'm grateful because I don't have the time to do that, and at the moment I'm not in a place with the Bible where I am reading it, and so it's just, like, thank you so much for doing that work and changing it, changing what it could be. Rather than it being a God that's critical and judgmental, it's a God that's actually open to helping us see what is and actually then just drawing us into what connection is. And so just thank you for that and for the space. So thank you guys too.